this time going forward, we really, really do mean it. The benefits that it gives us is it informs our national security policy. Again, if you're the president and his top advisors and you're trying to make sense of this wide array of challenges, intelligence is the first thing you need to have to understand the world in which you're dealing with. And then for our operators, our warfighters and other operators, our intelligence capabilities really enable what we call intelligence-driven precision operations. When directed by the president, the intelligence community provides him with additional options in between diplomacy and the overt use of military force. These are very important as well. And then, of course, our principal raison d'etre is preventing strategic surprise. It's very challenging today as we look forward. I would add one other point as we look at this, and that is intelligence is a significant source of advantage for the United States today. And it's an advantage that is very important to us, but it's also one that has to be used aggressively, but also prudently to make sure we're helping our leaders solve problems and not adding to their problems. And of course, as you conduct operations, there's inherent risk in them, and so the risk gain is something that we look at all the time and continue to evolve. All right, now I'd like to talk about some investments we're making in capability areas to sustain this intelligence advantage well into the future. I've grouped this into five areas to focus defense intelligence and our integration with national intelligence on the defense strategic guidance that Dr. Hicks worked on so ably a couple years ago, I guess it was, and the president signed out, and then our quadrennial defense review, which we just completed, and soon to be released national intelligence strategy. I group our major priorities into five areas. Global coverage, the ability to operate in what we call anti-access area denial environments, a key power projection challenge for us. Sustaining our capabilities in counterterrorism operations and adding to them in counterproliferation. Building out our cyber capabilities and then strengthening our capabilities in counterintelligence and security. So let me touch on a few of these. First, global coverage. This really enables everything we do across mission areas. And as budgets flatten or decline, becomes even more important given the global distribution and diversity of challenges that we face. I can't say too much about the specifics in many of these areas, but I will say a few things. The first, as Director Clapper said in Colorado Springs a couple weeks ago, and Betty Sapp, our director of the NRO, mentioned at a conference in Florida about a month ago, there are big changes ahead in the way we use our overhead space architecture. Some of the biggest changes, in my view, that we've seen in several decades. It will be possible, as Director Clapper mentioned, through techniques such as activity-based intelligence and associated architecture capabilities to go with it, to have persistence we've never had before, to where we can look at things for long periods of time. And you can imagine the benefits that will give us. The second aspect that I believe will be revolutionary as we go forward, besides persistence, is integration. Rather than having an overhead architecture, as Betty Sapp described it, that is a set of individual systems with supporting systems, we will have for the first time going forward a really integrated architecture that can tip and cue, and there's tremendous benefits that come from that. We're working to strengthen our cryptanalytic capabilities, and then our national level defense human capabilities through an initiative we call the Defense Clandestine Service. In the anti-access aerial denial environment, this is really associated with our rebalance to Asia and to keep pace with high-end challenges. We're working on assured, persistent intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, and the resiliency of our space architecture. And that's about all I can say at that point. But the third bullet is really kind of indicative there, and that is we're focused as a strategy on adapting some of the techniques we've learned in counterterrorism, where we have gotten incredibly precise, and apply that to these higher-end environments. In the counterterrorism area, the Predator and Reaper, the unmanned aerial aircraft, unaffectionately known as drones, have been the signature weapon of our counterterrorism capability over the past decade, much as the improvised explosive device has been the signature weapon of insurgents and terrorists. It has enabled the most precise campaign, counterterrorism campaign, in the history of warfare, and it is our most effective instrument. We are very healthy in this area, but we are looking to make enhancements in some advanced sensors, as well as extending the range of our second generation platform considerably. Our integration between our operators and intelligence is another key advantage in both of these areas, and something we're working to sustain as well. And then back to the challenges chart. As the CT problem evolves and shifts on us, we're at a turning point, not just in national security strategy, but also in the counterterrorism arena, of the need to rebalance and rethink some of the ways we've done business. What has really worked? What is adaptable to the evolving threat? What is not? And what do we need to invent anew? Okay, on cyber capabilities, we're making significant progress in developing a cyber force to defend our networks, to support combatant commanders, and to defend the United States if called upon to do so, and the associated support structures to go with it, intelligence capabilities, as you would in any new domain, whether it's space or cyber or others. Key to making that cyber force effectively, and we've had a number of great sessions, including some here at CSIS, is really our partnerships with industry, our partnerships across the U.S. government with Department of Homeland Security and the FBI, but also with industry, in terms of particularly in the area of information sharing. And then finally, counterintelligence and security. As a result of WikiLeaks, Snowden, Fort Hood, and the Navy Yard Navy Yard attack, and the reviews associated with those four incidents, we've taken significant measures now to strengthen our capabilities against insider threats, whether it's workplace violence or espionage, and are establishing an insider threat center going forward. We're also working with the Congress and with the OPM looking to and the DNI, looking to shift the way we evaluate people for positions of responsibility and security clearances through a method called continuous evaluation. If you think of, rather than snapshots in times where you do an investigation and then you wait several years and you do it again, this is more a continuous stream like you do with credit checks. And we believe it will have a number of advantages.